I want to see the team have the kind of fight that they had in 2016, even if we shock the world. Shock the world!
Playing a Mexican team in the next round.
That's what I was about to say.
Powered it forward, Jack Price in goal.
And the Colorado Rapids, the team from the Rockies, have scaled their own mountain tonight. They are MLS Cup winners.
We'll give you the ball so that we can spring on you and then claw your face off and eat your flesh. Hello, Rapids fans, and welcome to Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard. We're recording this on the evening of Wednesday, December 12th, 2018. 12s are wild today. Rabbi Mark Goodman, how are you doing tonight, my friend?
Good. I don't think I had a really productive day in some level and a really not productive way in others. I got my car fixed, which meant going to a new and really not good neighborhood in Pittsburgh, where I got to witness a crack deal, which was always fun. You know, you don't really see those in your normal work day typically. So, that's always fun. And then the other exciting thing by comparison is that I'm just grinding my way out of, the fourth division in England in FIFA 18. I took, Mansfield Town because Iggy liked the colors. And that's what I spent. You know, I felt really good about my team going into the season until our starting striker, tore his ACL in the Carabao Cup, which used to be called the Johnston's Paint Trophy.
Yeah.
Which I think Men in Blazers just referred to as the Cuppity Cup Cup because it changes name.
Yes.
So often. I don't think you should be allowed to change a cup's name more than once every 20 years. I'm still irritated at the English Premier League for not being the, what was it called? It was a bank. Some bank?
Barclays Premier League.
Yeah, that didn't last very long. It's gotta last longer than that. I remember when NASCAR was the, let's see, they were the Sprint. It was the Sprint NASCAR League, and then it was the Winston Cup, and there was the, Was there a Piston Cup in there somewhere and a Jock Support Cup? I don't remember all these things, but like you kind of should be able to sign a deal for like 20 to 100 years, you know? Are we still referring it to Sports Authority at Mile High Field? I don't remember.
I always just call it Mile High, and everyone who I've spoken to, Colorado native or otherwise, just refers to it as Mile High. I feel like
what about Invesco? Whatever happened to Invesco?
I don't know. I feel like the critical thing for me, Mark, is either you want to have the original naming rights or you want to have the biggest longevity of it. So, for example, when people talk about the Rose Bowl, the game in college football, it's always the Rose Bowl presented by sponsor. Whereas some of the newer bowls or the ones that haven't been around as long or the ones that aren't as prestigious or aren't as stable, you know, it'll be like the Tostitos Fiesta Bowl, for example. It has a new sponsor. It's still a Fiesta Bowl, but Tostitos comes before that, you know, as opposed to it's, you know, it's Invesco Field, but it's still Mile High Stadium. You know, you think about that, you know, when you have, say, a basketball arena, for example, and it's such and such arena, but then it's such and such courts, and the longevity one, or the more historic one, or the non-naming rights one, you know, that with sponsorship is the one that actually gets the full name, the shorthand that everybody refers to it, you know, whereas, you know, these English Premier League teams, for example, that, you know, have been around for 120 years and have been at the same stadium for multiple generations, they'll sell naming rights for a stand. So, you know, it'll be the such and such end, but it's still, you know, it's still the actual name itself. You know, regardless of what sponsorship the Glazers end up picking, if they choose one in the next couple of years, everybody's still going to call it Old Trafford. And you know, what would it take right now, and how long would it have to go for the general lexicon of Rapids fans to not refer to the Rapids Stadium as Dick's Sporting Goods Park or an abbreviation or variation of it?
Yeah, bowl games are a great example, going back to a previous thing that you said, of like ridiculous sponsor names. I mean, who can forget the Polon Weed Eater Bowl, which maybe might have been one of the best one. There was one that was like just sponsored by potatoes, wasn't there? Like, you know, was it the Oreida Potato Bowl, or is
the game in Boise at the Blue Turf has been, or I don't know if it still is now, but it's long been the Idaho Potato Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, but they also change a lot, which is pretty pretty absurd. And then, you know, going on to other topics, there was, it would be really fun going back to the concept of Invesco Field, and Sports Authority Field, defunct companies and potentially companies that their sponsorship was actually a mark of shame on, their team. So Chow, for example, with the Rapids, but also, Enron Field for the, Houston Astros, who, you know, I mean, like, Enron literally has multiple documentaries about the levels of malfeasance and fraud involved in that. I mean, that would be a good BuzzFeed, clip, listicle article for somebody to do, like, you know, embarrassing, companies that used to sponsor. The last one that I'll add is at some point very, very soon, every single team and every single stadium in the Premier League will actually just be called the Emirates. You know, like the Emirates is, and the country of Qatar seems to basically own a little bit of all of soccer at this point. There was a time briefly in MLS a couple of years ago when they bought the rights to something in MLS. Like they put their name on the All-Star game or they put their name on, something else.
I think it was the All-Star game at Avaya. I don't remember which year, when they played Arsenal, which made a lot of sense from a sponsorship standpoint.
There was another one before that, and I was kind of surprised just that, like, I don't know where Emirates flies to in the United States. I mean, I'm sure they fly into New York, but, like, I don't think I could take an Emirates airline anywhere. Which, you know, but that's neither here. I mean, then again, I live in Pittsburgh, and there ain't too many airlines that fly out of here. Pittsburgh's airport, not great. Gotta be honest. Although, you know, I've been slumming it hard after Denver. You know, Denver airport, pretty spectacular. Although, we will see when I fly in, tomorrow. Woohoo! Yes, it's true, folks. I'm flying in tomorrow. Although by the time you hear this, I'll be in you, Colorado. I'll be there. I hear that they're doing massive renovations of the main concourse in at DIA. So
Have you seen the trolley signs too?
No.
Oh my God. You need to Google this as soon as we're done recording, but they put up a whole bunch of signs, like, intentionally mocking and making memes of the Illuminati conspiracy theorists about DIA.
Yeah. I did see that, which is really cool, talking about all the theories about the missile silos under Peña Boulevard and the Blue Horse being a Illuminati conspiracy and the whole thing.
Yeah. Yes. I guess the only other thing I'll say, Mark, is I'm sure that Holding the High Line will be taking the Emirates in the late fall, early winter of 2022 when we are sponsored by the Emirates and we'll be going to watch Kellen Acosta, future captain of the U.S. men's national team, lead, you know, Greg Berhalter's team, to victory in the 2022 World Cup.
I'd go to Qatar if somebody else paid for it. You know, I'm not going to stand on that much principle, despite the questionable practices that have been employed in building those stadiums. But we should get to football in a more direct way than, just rambling incoherently about Blue Horse conspiracies.
Indubitably, Mark. We have a lot to talk about this week, folks. For those of you who haven't been checking up on the news, the Rapids have multiple trades. A backup goalkeeper is gone, and they have multiple players formerly of the Vancouver Whitecaps. We will do this show in chronological order from whence we last potted. So, of course, Mark, since we previewed it last week, I think we at least have to touch on the fact that it happened this past Saturday at Mercedes-Benz Arena. Atlanta United are 2018 MLS Cup champions, defeating the Portland Timbers by a score of 2-0, a fairly comprehensive victory. I figure most of our listeners are aware that it happened. I've heard it talked about on a number of channels. Your general thoughts on, you know, the five stripes getting one star?
It was a good game, and I think the tweet that resounded with me the most was somebody saying that Tata Martino put on a tactical masterclass. I think it was very easy for Martino to look at what Gino Savarese was likely to do based on the very counterattacking style of Portland and really restrict that. And also, you know, Atlanta plays beautiful football. They move the ball around really well and they were able to capitalize on that. And I think, you know, the thing that I said in previewing it last week, did come true, which was you just lose track of Joseph Martinez and he does you really badly. And that's what he did on that first goal. The ball kind of took a funny, he kind of plowed through the line. The ball kind of took a funny, bounce, and then it got played into him, and he was behind the line in perfect timing, and that was that, you know, and that's just how it is. The question, the really good question now is when, whether there's any chance that Martinez stays with the team next year. It feels like Almirón is on his way out.
Yeah, the rumbling is that they're, that Atlanta, Almirón, and Newcastle United are, dotting the I's and crossing the T's as we speak. It might be official by the time this pod comes out.
Which is great, I think, for him. But, you know, if they can hang on to Martinez and then put, if they can hang on to Joseph Martinez and the rumor transfer of Pity Martinez from Argentina goes through, then I think it'll be good. And we will have to, I mean, you know, I'm sounding the alarm now, but the amount of punning you're going to hear on the name Pity, you know, if they don't do the Mr. T, TIFO, like basically week one, they're just trolling us for not doing it because that's where it belongs. So, all right, what are your thoughts on that game? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I mean, I root for, when none of the teams that I care about or none of the teams that I cover are playing anymore, at that point, I just root for a combination of a good story and then, of course, absolute chaos as well. We didn't get total chaos in this one. You know, the total chaos one would have been, I think Portland Timbers winning it in the PKs or something like that, and maybe a red card or two. But, you know, I thought it was as expected. I think, you know, Portland played the way that you would have expected them to, and for that to happen, you know, they were going to have to hold out as long as possible. It was going to have to be scoreless at halftime. It wasn't. And then even if or when Atlanta got the first goal, Portland needed to get the next one to have a chance of either winning it or sending it to extra time. And that didn't really happen either. From that standpoint, I was a little bit disappointed that we didn't see alterations from the Timbers earlier, either in the first 20 to 30 minutes, seeing what Atlanta was showing them and maybe shifting something up from Giovanni Savarese. Didn't look like that Portland was much inspired, coming out in the second half. And then I think it was the 54th minute that second goal goes in, and they just took too long to make any substitutions, and none of the substitutes really had an impact. You know, by talent basis, Diego Valeri was at worst the third best player going into the final. And for Portland to really have a shot at winning the game, he was going to have to be the first or the second best player on the field, and he wasn't really that impactful. I thought, you know, Portland was playing with house money. I think Atlanta are definitely the rightful champions. As I wrote about and earlier this week on Last Word on Soccer, you know, I think Atlanta cemented themselves as the new super club, and everything that MLS 3.0 has become, how it is different from the MLS previously and what it's aspiring to be, Atlanta does really, really well. They saw the South American market and tapped into that in ways that nobody else had before then. And other clubs, including the Colorado Rapids, were a year to 18 months behind that. Tata Martino brought in a whole bunch of new ideas from a tactical standpoint that we haven't really seen. You know, maybe the one thing that Atlanta hasn't really done that's been a big part of MLS 3.0 has been, getting academy players, having that, their development academy be productive and have that produce first team quality talent. Granted, you know, their academy teams existed for what, 3-4 years at the absolute most. So it takes time for that fruit to ripen. So I give them a pass on that. But other than that, they're the new standard. You know, if you are not emulating Atlanta or trying to catch up or trying to surpass them, you are being left in the dust. And I genuinely wonder how clubs like the Rapids are going to try and remotely catch up to them, let alone be competitive in a Western Conference that's showing that in the reboots that you've seen from the LA Galaxy, that you probably expect the Seattle Sounders to be going into the next year or two, what Sporting Kansas City is doing as a small market, and of course, you know, everything that Bob Bradley's doing over at LAFC. On the other side, I really kind of have to wonder if the door isn't closing, it's actively being shut for the Portland Timbers. Chara and Valeri, the Diegos, aren't getting any younger. They've never really tapped into their academy. You know, they've done fantastic things together in that group, and I think Giovanni Savarese is the guy to lead them, but I wonder at this point, you know, you look at the, you know, the off statistic that you probably know better than me, Mark, about what the Portland Timbers are with Chara starting and without Chara starting, and it's night and day. And eventually, Father Time's gonna win for him. The same thing can be said of Diego Valeri, and I don't know how you replace those guys, and I don't know how you fill the gap in a Western Conference that's becoming an arms race. Let's move on, Mark, to Rapids-related things. This past Sunday, during the half-day transfer window that was available prior to the decision-making with the MLS expansion draft that happened earlier this week, the Colorado Rapids made a trade with the Vancouver Whitecaps. They sent longtime goalkeeper Zach McMath to Vancouver in exchange for midfielder Nicholas Mesquita and $100,000 U.S. dollars in targeted allocation money. Mark, your thoughts on this, and I know you want to talk about this. Talk about Zach McMath's legacy in Burgundy.
Well, on some level, you know, on one level, it's not much of a legacy because he doesn't have a ton of playing time for the Colorado Rapids. What he does have is a reputation of being well-liked by the fans, of being a really good volunteer in the community. He's a nice guy. I mean, I've gotten to speak with him on a couple different occasions, and I found him really, really enjoyable. I mean, his net total of games played for the Colorado Rapids is 30, and he, you know, was generally thought of, I think, for the bulk of his time in Colorado as at least as good as Tim Howard. In the decline, the period of decline Tim Howard, that we saw from 2016 through 2018. I think that the biggest challenge of this transaction is not that the Rapids gave up Zach McMath, because I think Zach had been sitting around waiting to be the number one or waiting to be dealt so that he could be the number one for a very long time. And I think Vancouver's a really good place. I tweeted this out, but the goalkeepers at Vancouver were really bad last year. Really, really. They had Brian Rowe, and Brian Rowe was actually better than their starting goalkeeper, whose name escapes me right now.
Stefan Marunovic.
He was, I think, statistically, if you look at a statistic that I like for goalkeepers, which goalkeeper statistics are all flawed by, you know, by nature, but expected goals against goals allowed. He had one of the worst rates in all of Major League Soccer, especially considering a guy with over 2,000 minutes. So this is a team with bad, bad goalkeeping problems. Zach McMath is a huge upgrade for them. It's a good move. Whether the Rapids got enough in return is a good question, but for the Rapids, I think they've always been in the same situation with Zach McMath in terms of leverage, which is everyone in the league knows that McMath is a first string caliber player, and everybody in the league knows that he's not going to get a starting job in Colorado. So, you know, he's stuck behind Tim Howard. That's how it is. That gives every team that negotiates with the Rapids leverage, unless he's sold abroad. And I was told, off the record, that Zach had offers to go abroad, a year and a half ago. To Israel, where, of course, because he's Jewish, he qualifies, as a domestic player in the Israeli league, which makes him very attractive there. And based on my knowledge of the Israeli league, which I'll put it up there, Matt, I am bar none one of the biggest experts on the Israeli soccer league in all of the state of Colorado when yeah. I am Colorado. he'd be a very good goal. He'd be a top five goalkeeper in the Israeli league. That being said, that wasn't the move the Rapids made. They don't need, you know, they don't need cash as much as they need cash flexibility. TAM is more valuable than straight cash because it can be applied directly to transfers, whereas straight cash from abroad has to be jiggered into your transfer rigmarole in a specific way. I said jiggered and rigmarole in the same sentence. That was kind of awesome. Anyways, point being, you know, I want to hear your thoughts on Zach's legacy, and then we can kind of go into like whether Mesquita and 100K was a good value or whether, you know, somebody got fleeced here. Matt, what do you think of, are you going to miss Zach? Are you kind of, you know, sad about this? Are you kind of like, yeah, you know, Tim was a better keeper the whole time. Like, what's your thoughts?
I'm going to miss Zach McMath from a media standpoint because I always felt that he was really open about talking to the media, you know, a little bit. We'll call it milquetoast in terms of his tone at times, you know, but a pretty straightforward, straight shooter in terms of talking about things. Every time I tried to ask a remotely nuanced tactical question, he gave me a really good nugget, and sometimes without me having to nudge him a whole lot. We had a very good conversation. I think that first game after the Tim Howard RSL red card in which we knew that he was starting, and I spoke with him earlier that week about just the difference between a four-man back line and three center backs with a fullback, and how is that different from how you approach things from a communication standpoint and a distribution standpoint, because at that point the Rapids were starting to be more of a possession team, and he gave me some really good stuff on that. Obviously a class act in the locker room, you know, a very good member, I believe, three-time Colorado Rapids Humanitarian of the Year, and if I'm not mistaken, I don't think he won it, but I believe he was a nominee this year for Humanitarian of the Year, so certainly a good spokesman for the club. You know, I say that, you know, his tenure in terms of being with the Rapids was very, very similar to his time with the Philadelphia Union, where he really had to work himself into the starting lineup and benefit from poor play from others, and he wasn't given the benefit of the doubt. You saw that ultimately it took him until 2012-2013 to become the starter. Then at that point, Philly, I believe, made a trade or was so bad that they had the number one overall pick and were taking Andre Blake, who's now, you know, the starting goalkeeper for the Jamaican national team and everything. And at that point, they knew they wanted to go with Andre Blake, even though in the immediacy for Jim Curtin that Zach McMath was going to be better. And then he comes here and he has to work his way through. And, you know, he was sitting behind Clint Irwin, benefited a little bit from Irwin leaving, but then it's okay. Again, finally, I'm the starter. There's nobody in my way. I'm going to get a chance to start. And then, you know, a year and a half later, Tim Howard comes in and he only plays 9 games in league play, with the Colorado Rapids. So I think, you know, for McMath, it was probably, give me a break. I had to work so hard to become the starter for Philadelphia. Somebody who was younger than me, albeit more talented, was immediately given the benefit of the doubt over me. You were traded for chump change. You had to do the exact same thing over again in Colorado. And then a year into you being the starter, you are unseated by a national team caliber, you know, World Cup 2014 legend, who there's no way you're ever going to beat him as long as he's remotely healthy and not starting. So I think he's going to Vancouver and he's excited because he knows that Brian Rowe's okay and Stefan Marunovic is bad. Vancouver had gave up the third most goals in the Western Conference last year, and they're in desperate need of a defensive reboot under a new head coach, you know, Mark Dos Santos. I presume that Mark Dos Santos wouldn't have given his blessing on this trade if he didn't think that McMath was a viable goalkeeper. So I think it's a better situation for Zach McMath. I agree with you in terms of the bartering power that other teams might have had over the Colorado Rapids in terms of an exchange for Zach McMath. But I think the other thing I'll say is, you know, the backup keeper options that you had throughout MLS to try and get somebody else were pretty darn slim in terms of players available this offseason. You had Orlando who chose not to pick up the option on Joe Bendick, you know, who I thought, you know, did an admirable job given the center backs that he had in front of him. But other than that, it was like Steve Clark or, you know, other, you know, caliber goalkeepers. I think, you know, McMath was the best guy who was available in terms of somebody who didn't have a club, was for sure leaving a club, or wasn't the de facto starter going into next year. And I think that there were at least 5, maybe 7 clubs in MLS that if McMath walked into the locker room right now, he would immediately unseat the goalkeeper who got the most starting minutes in 2018. On the other side, I think it's more my question in terms of what Nicholas Mosqueda brings to the club is more what his specific role is. You know, he's been started with Vancouver in 2014. He was a Carl Robinson guy, you know, one of those shifty wingers. I feel like Vancouver just had a plethora of wingers, and, you know, Mosqueda was just kind of behind the Jordi Reynas and the Christian Teixeiras of the world, and he never really got an opportunity to start. He only played more than 1,000 minutes in one single season. Stats aren't that great for a system that I thought fitted him in terms of either, you know, creating chaos and pinging the ball around or sitting back and then counterattacking. Maybe that was minutes played. Maybe that was a style of play. Maybe he's just an average player. But my first question to Porrick Smith or Anthony Hudson the next time I see them in terms of what's going on in the midfield is Mosqueda a number 8? Is he a number 10? Is he an early striker? And then as we'll talk into a minute, what's his role going to be in the context of his chemistry from this past season with Kai Kamara? Mark, your thoughts on what Mosqueda brings to the Rapids?
Yeah, I definitely know that I was definitely being snarky on Twitter when I suggested that the Rapids just dropped Enzo Martinez, a 28-year-old Uruguayan who had like 3 assists and 0 goals, and picked up a 27-year-old Uruguayan who had three goals and one assist. Like the numbers, the counting stats, which are never that instructive, don't really say much about Mesquita. I think Colorado clearly thinks that he was being misused in Carl Robinson's system, and that there's some way to get more out of what Mesquita is. I would assume that he's going to be playing as either a 10 or as a creator in the midfield, whether that's at the 10 spot or further back in the Rapids, what we assume is going to be another run at the diamond. You know, I think it's not a bad move to say we've got a backup keeper that we're not really using. Let's turn him into cash and a player who might be a really good spark. But I very much believe that a guy who has had 3 years in with a major league soccer team and hasn't really distinguished himself, it's a fool's errand to believe that you give him a fourth year and suddenly he's going to blow up. It happens once in a while, but it's really uncommon. You'd really rather have a proven guy. You know, the inverse of that is what we're going to be getting. We're not there yet, but what we're going to be getting when we talk about Kai Kamara, which is you see an older player who was an exceptional striker 3 years ago and who is clearly both on age and on production in decline. And you say, well, we'll get him and maybe we can suddenly up his production. It's like, You're reaching for things that are trend wise probably unlikely, right? If you look at the percentage odds of what are the odds that Mesquita goes from 3 goals to 10 next year, or 1 assist to 10 next year? What are the odds that Kai Kamara goes from, I think he had 9 goals this year?
14.
Sorry. I knew it was a sizable number, but not an obscene number. What are the chances that he produces the exact same thing with one more year on his odometer? Like, the odds are low. Like, you're looking for outliers on a statistical map. So I think that's my concern with Mesquita. But, you know, like I said, with the Rapids, everybody in the league had him over a barrel. I think Mesquita's a pretty good player to squeeze out of a backup goalkeeper, even a backup goalkeeper like ours, who you could argue is the best in the league. The last thing I'll say about that, and that, you know, I'll ask you what you think and you can kind of throw it back at me, is where does this leave the Colorado Rapids with regards to not only a backup goalkeeper, but a third string goalkeeper? Because they also didn't tender Andrew Dykstra a contract. So Colorado is completely and totally, down to one dude between the pipes. Matt, what do you think happens, going down the road?
Well, I think first of all, you know, there's plenty, you'd be more familiar with this than me, especially in the Eastern Conference of the USL. You know, I'm sure that there's some run-of-the-mill starter right now who would love the opportunity, even if there's no guaranteed playing time whatsoever, of just getting to practice with Tim Howard and be around him on a daily basis. And I'm sure that keeper is going to be, a league minimum, or certainly not six figures in terms of the salary spot. So I think they can find somebody there. You know, maybe they take a flyer on a Steve Clark or somebody like that. I think there'll be other goalkeepers that are available. Or maybe you go to drafting a keeper. I think at least in the immediacy, I don't think there'll be a problem in terms of finding guys who will be backups, or worst case scenario, bodies for that Friday practice when Dylan Cerna wants to work on his, you know, back post chip shot over a really tall keeper, and Tim Howard's, you know, just done for the day. So I think they'll be able to find that, whether it's in USL, from the upcoming reentry draft or somebody else like that, or, you know, certainly going to the MLS Super Draft in terms of finding the available keeper options that are there. My bigger question is what happens post Tim Howard, because Zach McMath, right, I believe, is 28 years old, if I'm not mistaken. Right. 27 right now. He'll be 28, next August. So presumably Tim Howard, 2019, captain, starter, retire. You then will have a 28 and a half year old Zach McMath, which for American goalkeepers is just entering your prime, to take in that role at $170,000, maybe a little bit more with bonuses and being the starter again come 2020. And now there's no immediate option. As you tweeted out, Mark, and I defer to you on this, there's no immediate, I think, academy goalkeeper who the Rapids could sign as a homegrown and immediately walk in 2020 or any time earlier. So for the purposes of 2019, I think they're fine just because you knew that Tim Howard was going to be the starter. Whether or not fans agree with that, or like that he's still a designated player is something we've hashed out on this podcast a number of times, and is not something that I think we'll be discussing in this moment. But my bigger question is what they do from a goalkeeping standpoint in 2020, given the sort of aging core that you have existing around the league right now, and the fact that there's no immediate available option internally because that academy front hasn't been bearing any fruit, and you now traded the one guy who was the heir apparent to Tim Howard. Mark, your thoughts on that? And you know, is Josh Turnley coming out of Cal State Cal Poly SLO early?
Trevor Mowry. Trevor's good, and he had a bunch of starts between him and Connor Gavigan. Those are the two Rapids U23 goalkeepers. They're both solid, but you know, you don't take a kid out of college, especially, you know, goalkeeper, where everybody, the book on goalkeeper is they mature later. You know, a good goalkeeper is 30, not 18. Zach Steffen, notwithstanding. So the two Rapids good goalkeepers are in their system are 19 years old. And they're both in college. Like, let them get a degree. So that if goalkeeping doesn't work out, you know, they can push paper in an office cubicle somewhere. There's nothing down on the farm. So that's, it's not that they're not good. It's just that they're not ready. And they can't step into the first team like Sam Vines or like Cole Bassett. So then what do you do? Well, you got a couple other options. One is you make trades with an MLS. You sign someone free agent from around the globe, which is what FC Cincinnati did today in signing a out of work Polish goalkeeper who were previously with Deportivo La Coruña, I think, in Spain. But we're talking about a goalkeeper who was 5 months out of work in the middle of the European season. I don't know if that's going to be a good move for them. Then you've got the USL, like as you mentioned, and I'll throw you a couple names I think might be interesting. And then the last option there is the college draft. And of the areas I don't know the most is I don't know who the good college goalkeepers are. Last year there was a couple of them, but none of them actually wound up sticking with MLS teams, out of the super draft. They may be on the team, but they were all loaned out to USL. So the best USL goalkeepers last year, probably the best one of all is, Josh Cohen with Sacramento. If Sacramento really wants to be an MLS team and they want to hang on to somebody, Josh Cohen is a guy that they want to pay too much money to stay there. Although it's not a bad idea to bring him up. The only downside on Josh Cohen is I don't think he's that tall. But you know, that never bothered Nick Raimondo, who was with the U.S. national team for a long time. After that, there's a couple other names that I thought were pretty impressive. Maxime Crépeau was, I think he belongs with Ottawa, but I think he actually might be either formerly or currently affiliated with Montreal. Greg Ranjitsing was Louisville City's goalkeeper, and he has been in the setup for Trinidad and Tobago in the past. He's been the backup goalkeeper for the Trinidad national team. I find him to be an exceptional goalkeeper. Great quick reactions and good reach. Diego Restrepo, who's bounced around USL and been good, and he used to play briefly for Charlotte, and I find him quite good. And then you've got three other names that I'll throw out there. All of them are familiar names to people who follow MLS or the Colorado Rapids. Two guys who were either pool goalkeepers or backups in the league. One of them is Travis Wara. Another one would be Trevor Spangenberg. Wara used to be the backup at DC United. Spangenberg used to be the pool goalkeeper, and I believe he was with Chivas TBD or Chivas RIP, as it's known. And the last one, and this will be my personal favorite for the Rapids to sign, one of the better goalkeepers in MLS in USL East last year was none other than Nashville's own Matt Pickens, former Colorado Rapid himself. So I think that would be hysterical. The Rapids went out and got Matt Pickens again. But I don't think it's likely to happen. So that's my rundown of USL goalkeepers. The odds of any of them lining up with the Rapids is low. But, you know, it's always fun to kind of know about these things.
Yeah, and for those of you saying, the pool goalkeepers, like, they're not an option. There's a reason they didn't have a job before, the reason that they weren't starting before. I would point to you to Clint Irwin, who was weeks away from retiring from soccer, who eventually found his way onto the Colorado Rapids and then, you know, onto winning trophies with Toronto FC. And then, of course, Tim Melia, who last year, I guess 2017 now, was the MLS Goalkeeper of the Year, was also previously a third stringer and, you know, an in and out of actually having a team pool goalkeeper as well. So there is precedent to suggest that there are diamonds in the rough there. I guess we'll move on to the expansion draft after I say one more thing, Mark. We got on a goalkeeper tangent, so I wasn't able to make this point. We kind of touched on it before, but I think there needs to be a distinct plan for Nicholas Mesquita. There wasn't really one in terms of a position or a role or a specific skill set that he was supposed to bring in Vancouver, and that might have stunted his ability to put up numbers or even get on the field. You know, we saw the Rapids take Enzo Martinez last season, who was good at a number of things, and then tried to fit a square peg into a round hole. And then by the time they figured out that he actually just needed to do what he was naturally good at the USL level, it was too late for the season, and then probably too late for Enzo Martinez as it was. So the Rapids need to have a plan for Mesquita. Mesquita needs to be on board, and that plan needs to work. Otherwise, this is just going to be another retread there. You know, if the plan is to take him and turn him into the right back starter, for example, I think that's a pretty horrible plan. But, you know, if he was thinking, you know, the entire time he was at Vancouver, you know, I'm not really a winger, I'm an underneath striker, and then you pair him up with Kai Kamara, who he has familiarity with, okay, that's an experiment that's worth having that might make this trade worth it. And at least, you know, people upset about at least the asset management as far as McMath's value. McMath in 2018 made $170,000 with the Colorado Rapids. Nicholas Mesquita's 2018 total compensation $130,000. So Mesquita definitely cheaper, and as the salary budget continues to extend, you know, Mesquita as a starter or at least somebody in the 18, pretty inexpensive as far as being, you know, a budget player making under 200K. All right, Mark, let's move on to the MLS expansion draft that happened on Tuesday afternoon. For those of you in Colorado, Axel Schuberg was unprotected from the Rapids. Everybody else, I thought, was pretty much as expected from who you would have expected the Rapids to protect. I wrote an article that essentially said, you know, Axel was probably either him or Kofi Opare were the two center backs that Twitter was pittering about as the two most available budget center backs who had started before but were on the outs for their team. Kofi Opare, formerly of DC United, his 2019 option, I believe, was not picked up there. Axel was fortunately not taken, fairly straightforward on that front. But then the Rapids did get Kai Kamara in that. FC Cincinnati picked up Kai Kamara with their second overall draft pick and then traded him to the Colorado Rapids. And then I believe used that international roster spot to get something else from Vancouver, question mark. But ultimately, the actual trade itself was Kai Kamara from FC Cincinnati to the Colorado Rapids in exchange for just a 2019 international roster spot. No future considerations there. Kai Kamara's 2018 salary was $1 million flat. He was a TAM player with the Vancouver Whitecaps. His option was not picked up by them. Unclear, based on his performance, how much that salary is going to fluctuate. Mark, any very brief hot takes on Axel not being protected and what statement the front office may or may not be making by protecting Marlon Harrison over him, and then your thoughts on Big Kai and his big attitude coming to Commerce City?
I can't say that I'm that surprised about not protecting Axel. You just don't have that many spots to protect. The other guy that I thought it wasn't that big a surprise, but it's still a statement, is Shkelzengashi, who was not protected. He's very expensive, and I think what you academically are doing is saying, like, nobody's going to take this guy who hasn't produced for the $1 million you'd have to pay him. But last year they did protect him, even though he wasn't very good in 2017. So I think it's a statement. You know, remember last offseason, we literally had Porik Smith going on the radio and saying, Gashi didn't, you know, follow his off-season regimen and he came in hurt and it was unacceptable. This season, we may not get that radio statement just because he doesn't rate in the media conversation anymore. But they did the effective equivalent of that by saying, like, yo, if any of you in the league want to take this garbage player off our hands, go ahead. So that's that take. The second thing you asked is about Kai Kamara. It was Jeff Carlisle tweeted today that he had information that the Rapids were signing him to a 2-year deal that was valued at $750,000 a year, and that contract incentives, performance incentives, might bump his contract up to $1 million. So the Rapids had cleared out about $1.6 million in roster space, and had cleared up $740,000 in TAM. So Kamara takes up a lot of that, and that's the non-discretionary TAM. If Colorado wants to go out and spend some of their own money on another player, they can do that. And I think they probably will. I think we can expect that they could buy one more expensive player. But right now, we're starting to see the roster come together. A lot of the big money signings of the roster. And I don't know about Kai Kamara. I mean, the good thing about Kai Kamara is that he's a scorer. He's a target forward, you know, exactly what you get. His hold up play is very, very good. He is very fast, but generally he just has exceptional timing at charging through the box, getting his head on it and bang it into the corner. I mean, he is Alan Gordon, but you get the first 75 minutes and not the last, 15 minutes, which is pretty cool. The downside is he can be, I wouldn't say a locker room distraction, but he has a history of burning himself out with clubs. He got pissed off about somebody else taking a penalty shot over him back in 2016, and Columbus wound up selling him on to New England. New England, he wasn't productive enough, and they wound up selling him on to Vancouver. So this is a guy on his fourth team in 2 years. People really like him. He's really, really warm, and he'll be a fan favorite almost certainly. And if he can keep his head and stay on good relations with everybody, then everything will be great. But this is, you know, the Colorado Rapids. They have a history of losing more games than they win. How's Kai Kamara going to react to that is a really good question.
No, I agree with you, Mark. I'll break this up similar to the recaps that we do when the Rapids play a game, and we recap it with good thing, bad thing, big thing. First of all, based on the reporting that you just mentioned from Carlisle, you know, effectively a, you know, I would say in the similar mold to Yannick Bolli, and then to a lesser extent, Dominic Baggi, you got Kai Kamara, who is more proven than both of them in MLS, more experienced than both of them in MLS, and then at least in the case of Yannick Bolli, significantly cheaper if it's the 750K. And then if there's all performance incentives, then, you know, that's at least covering the Rapids from an insurance standpoint if Kai Kamara ends up being a bust, or just is, you know, not productive in any way, shape, or form. I think the good thing on the front is, that you have with Kamara is that pretty much everywhere he's gone, he's scored goals. You know, he was effective, albeit not the main starter with Sporting Kansas City up until the start of, you know, them winning US Open Cups and, obviously the MLS Cup in, 2013. You know, he had a couple stints, I believe a year at Middlesbrough, and somewhere in there was an off season or a part season loan to, Norwich City. I do not remember offhand. I think Middlesbrough was in the championship at the time, and I think Norwich City, was finding a relegation battle in the Premier League at that point. But he scored at both of those, not at both of those places, not to the extent that he scored in MLS. You know, he had 22 goals in 2015 with Columbus Crew, was a big part of their MLS Cup run. And then, as you mentioned, he had the blow up, with, Federico Higuain. I believe that was a home game in the middle of the season, and Kamara had a brace at that point. He wanted a hat trick. Pipo Higuain was the captain at the time, and there was discrepancy about that. And basically it was both of, it was kind of a, I remember the offseason comments was it was poor, or the off, the post-game comments after that, was, you know, it's poor, it's poor teammate effort by myself and Federico, and we need to work on that together. And then it seemed like a good group thing. But then either the next day or in training the next week, he basically said, you know, I've put up better numbers when I got regular service at Sporting Kansas City and everything. You guys like to tout Higuain as one of the best number 10s in MLS, but I score better with other people on fewer shots than I have with him. And then at that point, it became pretty clear that Kai Kamara was just completely volatile, and I assume either Greg Berhalter and or a combination of the locker room just sided with Higuain on that front and then ultimately sold him onto New England. You know, we had some good moments in New England, and, you know, was able to score along with Juan Angadello, but I think there was a little bit of conflict there. That was in the aftermath of the Revs kind of crashing out after they made MLS Cup in 2014, and then Jay Heaps was ultimately sold on. So, you know, I think, somebody tweeted, at me earlier this week asking about Kai Kamara and either being a locker room cancer or more blown up. I think it's definitely shades of gray. I think it depends on the dynamic and in particular how important and how valued he is as an attacking player by his teammates and also by the coaching staff. Is there a competition for playing time? Is there a competition for starting minutes? You know, is there going to be a similar situation as we saw with Stefan Aigner earlier this season, or where Anthony Hudson was essentially saying that Nicky Jackson and Jack McBean are showing way more effort and clearly care in practice, therefore I'm going to give them playing time over Yannick Bolli, and what does that look like? Or does Kai Kamara come in and does Anthony Hudson say, Kai, if you put in the work, if you do X, Y, and Z that are reasonable expectations, you will be the starter, and our expectation is you are going to be the man up front. Our plan is going to be to get you the ball and have you head and kick the ball into the net. If that's the plan, I think Kai Kamara is capable of being a happy camper and, you know, a productive heel to other teams in MLS. Typically also, Kai Kamara is technically not as happy either, both when he's not playing and not getting as much of the ball, and also when the team's not doing well. Does he temper expectations knowing the Rapids almost won the Supporters' Shield in 2018? Or does he come in saying, I am going to be part of the reason why the Rapids will not be that in 2019? So I think it's going to depend on his attitude. It's going to depend on also the approach of how the Rapids intend to use them. I think there is a way to strike harmony in there that is healthy and then also give them a little bit of flexibility should Kai Kamara not be productive at 34 years old. Mark, your thoughts on maybe the degradation of Kai Kamara and in particular this being, I think, a gap solution to what Porrick Smith has alluded to, the inevitable number 9 DP who will be coming in after Gashi and Howard are off the books this season.
Yeah, it's you know, there are not a lot of players who maintain their level past the age of 30 in Major League Soccer. Forward and target forward is a specific kind of position where you might be able to maintain a little bit longer than your average player, but not by much. Kai Kamara's actually been pretty close to maintaining it. So, he was, in 2016, he had, in 2015, he had that ridiculous year. He put in 22 goals for the Columbus Crew. In 2016, he put in 12, between two teams. In 2017, he put in 12. In 2018, he put in, as you mentioned, 14. With a very good, Vancouver, offense behind him. There are players who, when they hit the age of 34, that's kind of the collapse. The LA Galaxy sold Edson Buddle to the Colorado Rapids, in 2012 when he was, 31 years old and he basically did nothing for the Rapids, scoring 5 goals in 2013 and only 2 goals in 2014.
So he got to 100 goals with the Rapids though.
Yes, he did on a penalty kick. Very good. But like if you're looking for players who turned into pumpkins, right after Colorado Rapids, forwards who turned into pumpkins right after the Colorado Rapids bought them, you could look at Edson Buddle. On the flip side, you could look at, older players around the league who were bought, and continue to produce and come up with, a few. I'm trying to think of one right now, but I can't, who, you know, might maintain. And so, that, and in addition, it's been a really, really long time since the Colorado Rapids had a guy who scored 12 goals. The last person to score 10 goals was DeShawn Brown. And that was, I believe, 2013 and 2014, he had 10 goals. And the last guy who was bigger than that was Connor Casey in either 2010 or 2011. So it's, you know, if you're just looking for a guy who will be better than the guys we've had for the last 5 years, then you probably will get that with Kai Kamara. But it's a low bar to clear.
No, I agree with you, Mark. You know, I think this is a, in terms of an in a vacuum, I think this is medium reward, medium risk in terms of what you're getting out of him. Given what the Rapids have gotten, you know, from the number nine position, I think it's a potential for high reward. Now, do I think that, you know, is Kai Kamara going to come in and win the Golden Boot with the Colorado Rapids? Probably not. But, you know, could I, you know, what would be, you know, I think 10 to 12 goals, maybe 2 to 4 assists would be a reasonable haul for him in 2019. And I wouldn't be shocked at all if he ended up getting that. You know, he's a better header of the ball than, you know, everybody, including Jack McBean of the forward core from this past year. I'd gander that he's not as fast. He's not the spring chicken he used to be. So he's probably not as fast as Dominic Baggi was. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if in a race he beat out either Joe Mason or Yannick Bolli for an extended period of time. You know, I'm curious to see what the Rapids do from a striker standpoint, but even if you want to allude to the, you know, it's hopeless, we have a bunch of injuries, let's just bunker and, you know, go to, you know, have the diamond midfield sit relatively deep in a low block, or, you know, go, you know, a 3-5-2 and that effectively morphs 10 minutes in into a 5-4-1, you know, even when the Rapids were bad under Pablo Mastroianni, you had the remote possibility of just lumping it up to Dominic Baggi, and he was going to beat a center back to the ball and use his speed and go one-on-one on the keeper and finish some of those chances. I think Kai Kamara is capable of doing that. So even if they just go completely hopeless route one, if there's a striker you want for that, who's available on the market this offseason, it was Kai Kamara. The other thing I'll say, again, similar to McMath from an asset management standpoint, they only gave up a 1 year of an international roster spot. Those in this past year, folks were going from anywhere from $75,000 to not quite $200,000 in total allocation money. That number fluctuated a little bit depending on the time of the year. You know, it was really high value towards the end of that summer transfer window when maybe a team was on the brink of making a signing, but in order to be in compliance, they needed an international roster slot. And sometimes that the evaluation of it fluctuated depending on whether it was GAM, TAM, or a combination that was being sold in between. But, you know, effectively, if you're thinking, let's just go to a monetary standpoint, you know, let's say, you know, at most $150,000. So $150,000 in general allocation money. That's what you swapped for Kai Kamara. Victor Ulloa was worth more than that. Greg Garza just got sold to FC Cincinnati for double that price. If you're talking other strikers, you know, in the parallel, you know, Dominic Dwyer, you know, was worth, after all the performance incentives with Orlando, 4 to 5 times as much as that. Christian Ramirez was worth 3 to 4 times as much as that. You know, find me somebody who scored 14 goals in MLS in 2018 who the Rapids were going to get for an international roster spot or even 3 times as much as that evaluation. So from an asset management standpoint, I don't think you could have gotten any better in terms of having a distinct need, a short-term need, and something without giving a whole lot when the Rapids didn't have a whole lot of assets that they could have given up. You know, if the Rapids were, you know, if they call up, if they call up LAFC, for example, and say, what do we have to give you for Adama Diomande? It dang well sure is more than just a 2019 international roster spot.
Yep. To conclude, I mean, one very simple thing is, well, at least we've basically locked up a player at a position. You know, like, you know, say what you will about whether Kai Kamara is past due or is the guy and is going to get it done. But like, we know who the Rapids are going to start on opening day at striker. And that's a good thing. That's a good thing to say. You know, they just need to clarify who's going to stand next to Kai as striker. Who's going to be the fourth guy in the midfield? And who the hell are the guys on the back line? Because almost every position except maybe Court Ford and Tommy Smith, I guess, are a little bit open.
Jack Price and Kellen Acosta in the midfield?
No, I was saying there's one open spot in that midfield, at least maybe two. I think Acosta's locked up either the pure eight number, eight spot. Mesquita has a good shot at that 10 spot. But Bassett could be that shuttler. So could Boateng. So could Blomberg. So could Serna. And then Jack Price is locked down that last spot. So I would imagine the Rapids are going to bring in at least one more center mid who can be in that mix. And may try to ship out one of the names I just mentioned, if they can. And they will probably be looking for somebody else to be a left back and somebody else to be a right back since they're thin at both positions. But now we're off and running into things that are going to be talked about for between you and me, Matt, for the next, 75 days.
Yeah, who's excited for three straight weeks of our podcast being a depth chart based on preseason results that we're getting and, not even any highlights on, what the Rapids are doing in their preseason in Florida, for example.
I love this time of year. I mean, I don't know about you, but like I remember in the wintertime with baseball, they refer to it as the hot stove season. Honestly, Matt, this is my favorite time of year. Also for podcasts, for those people who are our faithful podcast listeners who like tune out and wait till the season starts, you're missing the good stuff, man. This is the time when, hypothetically speaking, we can still score a whole bunch of amazing players. And it's all, everything's in potencia. It's all light and dream right now. We could any day now buy the player that will get us to MLS Cup. It could happen, folks, right now. But to be more serious, like the ability to say, like, there are pieces of the puzzle that we have yet to land. Who are we going to get? I love that, the speculation. The most annoying, most wonderful articles I would ever do is I would literally just, go through Transfer Market looking for players at positions the Rapids need, who fit the budget the Rapids need, who fit the age brackets the Rapids need, and just speculate on ridiculous possibilities of Norwegian second division players that Colorado might be interested in. That was my favorite thing to do, and that's the nerdiest thing in the world. And I love it. But this is the good stuff, baby.
Okay, I just had a thought, Mark, that I think about doing, but I think would be more fun to just assign you as homework. Go through, and I want an understanding of, you mentioned that, like, Transfer Market, for example, is a place that everybody likes to go to, or just seeing, like, what's the evaluation that FIFA the video game gives on a player as well. Go through and rate those two compared to what they're actually sold for when the information is available and see how close they are to actually getting what the evaluation is for, like, the random Scandinavian players coming to MLS.
Yeah, no, the FIFA video game is exceptional, but not if you actually use the video game. You've got to use some of the online website tools for it. But, now we're far afield. But, I think reporters often mock when, there was a story last year, I think, that Porik Smith used Football Manager to kind of, like, familiarize himself with names in the league, and then he would go out and, see what scouts thought about that. And I think that was roundly mocked as like, oh my God, you're using a video game. Football Manager is like a database with like 125,000 players in it. Damn straight you should use that as a scouting tool. Like, you can't know 125,000 names off the top of your head. You've got to use some sort of basic metric to like eliminate the guys you absolutely cannot afford and eliminate the guys that are absolute trash and don't belong in this league at all. And then start to hone in on like, what are you looking for? Like, then you start to use videotape and so on. So like, there ain't nothing wrong with using FIFA, man.
Yeah.
But if you're like, yo, that guy's haircut doesn't look good, in the video game as your metric, then maybe you could take a closer look and call a scouting department.
Yeah, Moneyball, ugly girlfriend, no confidence. But no, I agree with Mark. The same people who mock that idea are the same people. Tell me that you find some random Scandinavian or Eastern European player who's linked with your MLS club and tweet at me. I genuinely want to know this. If one of your first three sources that you go to find anything about this guy you've never heard of isn't their Wikipedia page, their Transfer Market, or some equivalent value, or looking them up on FIFA or Football Manager.
Matt, you've just explained my entire methodology for how I write articles in the off season. Like, all three of those. And who scored, his who scored numbers. But the funny thing is, you may know this, you may not, but like, who scored doesn't track the smaller league. So like I remember when the Rapids were in talks or were rumored to be getting Skelzengashi, like there were no numbers on him. The only thing we knew about him was what he'd done in Champions and Europa League. Like I didn't know. There was no way to find out how he had even done in the Swiss league, except to go to his own club's webpage, which doesn't tell you anything good except counting stats. So I don't know. You know, it's hard to get good information. The other fun activity that, you know, for those of you who are, Rapids fans who follow the media, if you're really, really bored, Google, a player's name or sorry, Google the Colorado Rapids on a daily basis. And go down to the bottom of the Google pile to find all the articles that come up in Italian and Scandinavian and Hungarian. Because that's what we're doing, man. I mean, I remember when Alan Pulido came up, you know, I found his name linked with the Colorado Rapids on a Greek website. Like, that's the reporting that we were doing back, you know, a couple years ago. Google Translate was a big part of it.
Yeah, and then when you're done being bored with that, Google image search idiot and see how many Donald Trump photos you have to go through before you find your least favorite member of the Colorado Rapids, past or present.
Nice.
We do have one, Ask HTHL from this week. I have not gotten to the Ask HTHLs that were follow-ups to, my interview with Phil McQuaid, the turf manager at DSG Park. I will get to that before the end of this calendar week, folks. We will not be talking about it on the podcast, however. But on a transfer off-season standpoint, we have an Ask HTHL from Wanners FC on Twitter, Mark. And he said, Rabbi made the comparison of Caleb Porter, Bob Bradley, and Jason Christ to other English managers. How about this comparison? Kai Kamara is the MLS version of Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Journeyman who scored a bunch of goals but has always failed to win the big one. Thoughts, Mark? I'll throw it to you first.
Oh, it's a really nice analogy. It does assume that he has a toolkit that's similar to Zlatan, which I don't know in terms of like how they play the game, if that's an apt comparison. But the basic concept of mercenary for hire type player, that's a pretty good one. That's a pretty good one. And the body type also, just he's a big physical player, who can kind of come in and dominate the game. You know, I really like the idea that there's a guy with a lot of personality. You know, he's got a great haircut. And he's got a signature goal celebration, which is he flashes the heart towards the stands. I remember very memorably a couple years ago, right after the Crew changed their
logo.
Yeah, he planted three hard hats in the crowd, and after he scored a banger, he put on a hard hat and posed with two other guys to do the Columbus Crew. I mean, you want sauce, baby. You want a little bit of energy. Matt, what do you think? Was there a player that you thought was a better analog other than Zlatan, or is that a good comparison for you?
Yeah, I get what Juan is going at from the description of journeyman who scores everywhere he goes but doesn't win the big one. I disagree with making Zlatan that person. You know, he's won trophies other than the LA Galaxy, unless we're including, you know, the non-trophy of winning the El Tráfico Derby in 2018. He's won trophies everywhere that he's gone. That said, I will say that Zlatan has always had, other than going back to Malmo, his youth club, in Sweden to sort of rebuild them when they were absolutely terrible, and he took a hometown discount to say, I'll be here for 3 years, I'll get you guys back into Champions League, we'll win the Tippadoggen or whatever the first division is called right now with their, you know, naming, you know, some Swedish bank probably. But, you know, everywhere he's gone, he's won trophies, but he's also always gone to a really soft landing spot. You know, at worst, Barcelona was the second best team in La Liga when he showed up, and obviously Zlatan is going to have an impact on that. AC Milan was already a favorite, if not a contender, for most of the Italian trophies, and certainly a competitor in Champions League when he showed up. So, you know, I would put him closer to like that, you know, that veteran minimum player in the NBA over the age of 30 who just, you know, keeps going from 1 year contract with a contender to another 1 year contract with a contender trying to win a trophy. You know, the guy who's just really good buddies with LeBron and just says, I'll play for the league minimum. You know, I'll play as much as you need me. I'll good be a good veteran presence. And if I come in, I'll put up numbers. You know, I think Jordan Jefferson, I'm not that much of an NBA person. I think he was that for the Cavs when LeBron and Kyrie won a couple years ago in the finals in Game 7. I would put him closer to that. In terms of a soccer comparison, you know, I would say Kai Kamara definitely fits the mold of he puts up goals everywhere he plays, doesn't necessarily win big trophies, and also doesn't necessarily make other players around him better. You know, he's going to show up, he's going to put up numbers, he's going to get his and get paid, but then eventually he burns out or he doesn't make other people good enough to finally actually win it. Say for, you know, 2015 when they made the final but then ultimately crapped out. I believe Kai Kamara did have the lone goal for the Crew in that 2-1 loss to Portland. So, you know, I would put him more in the, if I were to make a Premier League comparison, like Christian Benteke or Romelu Lukaku, where if healthy and starting, they'll score goals, but they're not going to be the reason you win a trophy. They're not going to be that one extra talisman you need to get over the hump, and he's not necessarily going to make anybody else around him any better. You know, was he that influential on Federico Higuain other than maybe putting in more goals to ultimately give more assists to him? You know, he didn't make Juan Agudelo or Diego Fagundes better in Vancouver. You know, was he that beneficial to Christian Teixeira, to Mesquita, or to Yordi Reyna in Vancouver? Not so much. So he's going to show up, he's going to get his, but then he's not going to make the young players better, and he's not going to be the reason that you win a trophy or make the playoffs as opposed to not making the playoffs. Let's move on to other stuff, Mark. The waiver draft happened yesterday, if you're listening to us on Thursday, December 13th. Nothing big happened from a Rapid standpoint. They didn't take any players. They didn't trade to move up. They didn't trade to give anybody a higher spot in this one. Waiver draft was, you know, pretty slim pickings, you know, other than maybe Marco Urania, if you want a number 9, who's going to get a bunch of assists and a bunch of, but not a bunch of goals. But we do have the reentry draft coming up this Friday, the first stage one, in which teams will have an option to select players and effectively absorb their 2019 team option that their previous team did not select, and then there'll be the second stage reentry draft this coming Thursday, in which teams will select that player, their old contract gets wiped off the boards, but they have to make them a bona fide offer, I think on that same Friday as well. Mark, any thoughts on the waiver draft in general, and, you know, is there anybody in the reentry draft to talk about at all, or shall we move to free agency?
The only thing I'll say about the reentry draft is two of the three teams that participated, Chicago and San Jose, were terrible in MLS last year, and they were skimming players off the bottom. So, you know, what we're learning from the waiver draft is basically, like, it's only desperate teams who are taking desperate players. And I guess from that standpoint, I'm kind of amused that the Rapids didn't participate because they didn't think that they could improve themselves with these bottom of the barrel guys. But there are definitely players in the waiver draft who will end up with MLS teams. It's just, you don't really need to use the waiver draft to acquire them. You just don't really need to worry that much that these guys are going to be huge upgrades on your team. So
I would agree. And I'd say a lot of the options that you'll have in the reentry draft, both stage one and stage two, are similar of skimming players off the bottom or players who are a little bit older. I've been contemplating turning this into an article, but essentially I have a theory that free agency, other than maybe 3 or 4 players a year, is never really that relevant or interesting. It was super exciting in the first year of free agency because, you know, for an entire generation of MLS players, it was the first time that they really had any bartering power within the system or with the teams that were potentially trying to court them. But now it's just kind of, it's the same group or it's a newer group of guys that are just old, overpaid, and kind of past their prime. You know, if I were named, dictator of MLS the next time that the CBA comes up, I would definitely try and loosen the rules on MLS free agency. Right now, it's you have to be 28 years old, and you have to have at least 8 years of service in MLS, you know, which at least for the current generation that is 28 years old, that's still in the time when a lot of players you were getting were out of the super draft. So in order for that to happen, assuming you're a 22-year-old, really markets a lot of MLS longtime players who are 30 plus. And while in previous iterations, those guys, because of the single entity and the closed system that MLS was operating in, had a lot of value within the league and would get a lot of money. They're at that age where they're looking for that final payday or an opportunity to really get paid. But they're also 30 years old. You know, you could draft a kid who might turn into something like Jackson, or you could give that time to a homegrown, or you could overspend on a player who's not going to be productive. So, you know, outside of the Jeff Laurentiwitzes and the Alan Gordons, it's just not that interesting anymore. But let's move on
to... Well, I'll just add one more thing, which is that these structures are frustrating and annoying. That the waiver draft, reentry stage one, stage two, and the free agency draft were all created by the league in order to keep the prices of players from rising precipitously. And also to keep players, although the players union uses those, reentry drafts as a way of making sure that a really good player who's making a lot of money, especially a veteran, who's making a lot of money with a team who gets cut loose or doesn't get their option approved, they don't get, cut from, say, $500,000 a year to $65,000 a year again. I think that all these structures are dumb. They're very different than the way the rest of the world works, which is when you're out of contract, you're essentially a free agent. The league probably would be better off creating a structure of veteran minimums that are triggered at certain, you know, years of experience. You know, you have 3 years in the league, you have 6 years in the league. This is the minimum the league can play you. X is the minimum the league can pay you. And getting rid of all these things, and that, you know, the day after you give 48 hours for everybody to recover from the binge drinking after MLS Cup, wherever the binge drinking takes place, preferably not in an Atlanta strip club. And then you potentially let everybody negotiate with everybody's agent as long as they hit those veteran minimums. That would just be simpler, and potentially, you know, would allow a player, because the other aspect of the reentry draft is that it has a bottom cap and it has kind of a top cap. Like, players can't get their salaries increased by a specific amount, and the free agency in MLS is the same thing. You could have, I think effectively, when you already have a salary cap league, that already exists, right? It's not like, next year Drew Moore is gonna suddenly get, a ginormous, $300,000 salary increase. Nobody in the league can afford that with the way the structure of a salary cap league works. So anyways, it's just, I don't like these drafts anymore. I'm tired of them. Let's move on.
Yeah, and they're increasingly irrelevant. You know, when you have, you know, the fourth round of the MLS Super Draft, half the teams end up passing on their draft pick anyways. You know, is the waiver draft really that relevant? You know, I would gander that there's not going to be more than five teams total that select a player or, you know, are engaged in a trade over a player selected in both reentry drafts combined. So if you have a mechanism in there for the sake of the single entity and the, you know, the capping or the inhibition of a free market system within your league, just to have that when less than a quarter of the teams involved are even participating, and it's just more complicated and completely unnecessary. Why does it exist other than, you know, to manage the cost, thus to maintain, you know, to maintain the revenue streams from all the expansion fees that Don Garber is pocketing a certain percentage of. But in any case, this has been Free Market MLS Solutions with Rabbi and Red. let's move on, Mark. Let's go to free agency. We talked about this a little bit earlier, I think last week, but free agency hadn't started then. And there was a lot of crazy stuff that was potentially going to happen then. Free agents do have the option to voluntarily enter the reentry draft. The overwhelming majority of them, I would say, historically, in the history of free agency in MLS, 90% of free agents choose to not participate in the reentry draft. Free agency officially started as of the end of the expansion draft. FC Cincinnati did have the option to select players who were eligible for free agency. So now that a lot of that dust is cleared, and potentially now as opposed to waiting for things to happen, agents and players are actively taking calls from MLS teams or contemplating their future. For a lot of these guys probably thinking, do I just want to go to USL and start somewhere? Mark, now that we know a little bit more on that, do you have any free agents from the list that's available right now that you want to revisit or re-talk about in the context of the Rapids?
Who is a possible interesting free agent? I remember looking at the list and thinking that it wasn't full of a lot of guys that I love. I've always liked Tony Beltran from RSL. I think he's a very good fullback. And he'd be a decent pickup for them. DeMarcus Beasley is also a left back that Colorado could have, but man, you know, DeMarcus is a man who has defeated Father Time over and over and over again, but he is really moving up there in years. Benny Fellhaber is clearly the best pure player on this list. I can't see him for Colorado. I also think that his odometer started to really show last year. He is like the exact guy. He is moving into that Andrea Pirlo kind of phase where he can pick out a pass and he can move the ball in beautiful ways and he can dribble 10 yards really well to kind of open up space, but don't ask for much more than that. I always liked Bagio Husidic, but he's definitely past his prime and should probably just retire at this point. But you know, if you want a bench depth defensive midfielder who can come in and do a good job for 10 minutes to hold down a game,
there's plenty of those on this list.
He's not a terrible option. Michael Parkhurst is an excellent center back who I'm not exactly sure why Atlanta thought he was gonna be past due next year. And that's it. That's the whole list for me. Everything else in here is basically hot garbage on a stick, and I wouldn't recommend any team in Major League Soccer, let alone the Rapids, pick up these guys. I guess the only other guy on this list that's even possible for Colorado is Chris Konopka, who's a goalkeeper, but he's the guy you scoop up at the veteran minimum and stash as really your third keeper. I really wouldn't want to see him between the pipes. So, that's my whole list. The last one on here, I guess, is Aurelien Collin, who was good 2 years ago, but hasn't been lately. So, I don't know. Anybody else I missed on this list, Matt?
I mean, I think you've got it pretty solid in terms of what you're getting out of this. You know, if you want the, you know, I would classify a lot of these guys in the Giles Barnes character, category. Maybe also Sebastian Letou, if you remember him with the Rapids, I think that back half of the 2016 season, where if you want a guy to just be a good locker room presence, you know, maybe be a mentor to one of the young players or an academy player, you know, maybe fill in as a starting role for one of those, there's a lot of those guys on the list. There's a lot of good character guys on this list. There's a lot of guys past their prime. But, I mean, if you're looking to, you know, the Rapids have a number of holes, the rumblings that Edgar Castillo, in my opinion, for financial reasons and good sound decisions on the financial front, is not coming back. You have a gaping hole at left back that I'm not sure Sam Vines is ready to fill those shoes. You have a lot of question marks at the right back position, and I don't think the right back position can be, let's start Marlon Hairston for 6 games, and if that doesn't work out, let's go back to Nana Boateng. So you have a lot of options at right back. You have a lot of options at the other number 8 position. All of those options are question marks right now. And I don't think, save for maybe 3 or 4 guys, that there's anybody that the Rapids realistically have a chance of picking up from this list who could be that lockdown. You know, okay, like we have signed a Graham Zusi caliber outside back who is going to be our left back. And we do not have to worry about that position, barring a torn ACL for the entire 2019 season. There's nobody on that list. If the Rapids needed a holding midfielder, in like a 4-2-3-1 system, maybe Ozzie Alonso. If you were looking at a number 10 who's going to have a lot of help around him, I think certainly Benny Fellhaber would be that. But, you know, outside of that, these are, let's pick up a guy and we're taking a flyer on him and maybe he'll be a contributor in the 18. You know, it'll be like a third. Like a third, he's a good, useful piece who will fill in a gap, but similar to Kamara, not make anybody else around us greater, not be the reason we make the playoffs. Maybe another third, they'll just be run of the mill in the middle. They'll have some good moments, they'll have some bad moments, they might be hurt. And then a third, like, wow, that was a waste of money, unless, you know, such and such young player was an absolute sponge with them, and then maybe that helped them to be better in 2019. I think just given the issues that you have at fullback, if DeMarcus Beasley still has his legs, you know, I would give him a call, say, hey, how do you feel about playing at altitude on grass? More for sentimental purposes, I don't think it would come to anything other than, you know, you want to have 10 bench appearances, and then make the veteran minimum. Maybe Mark Birch, who's out of contract with Minnesota United, who might be interested in coming back for a hometown discount. you know, other than that, it's pretty slim pickings. The other name that I had listed out here was Breck Shea. He's definitely in that high risk, high reward category, depending on what his salary was. He was a TAM player in 2018. You know, if he's willing to come into the Rapids at $150,000 with a bunch of performance incentives, you know, I think that would be an interesting thing to explore. He might be able to play as number eight. He's been a forward at times. He's been a fullback on both sides, you know, kind of a utility player who is capable and who has in the past played every single role that the Rapids right now have a gaping hole at. If they're looking for another striker option, you know, and another player who can be a thorn in the side and an absolute heel, I've always enjoyed watching Quincy Ameriquois play. I don't know how good he would be for the Rapids. I don't know how, you know, much creating opportunities for himself, but, you know, if you're just looking to absolutely be a thorn in the side of the opponent, Kai Kamara is going to be that for a center back, and Quincy Ameriquois is going to be chirping up the holding midfielder on the other side. For all these guys who are out of contract, we don't have a whole lot of information on what they would be wanting from a salary standpoint. Obviously, the guys with the options declined, you could choose to pick up that option, and there's mechanisms in place. There's only so much flexibility that those players have in terms of a pay increase or a pay decrease. The guys who are out of contract, it's a little bit more open season. That makes you know, their market value a little bit more volatile. That also means that you could be dealing with a price competition, you know, with, the option decline for, say, you know, Brad Evans, for example. There's only so much that he can get a salary bump there. So, you know, if three or four teams come to him and somebody gives him the max, you know, there's only so much that you can go up to that. Whereas it's potentially open season on a guy like Benny Fellhaber. So at that point, Benny's weighing the, how much do I want to get paid? Where do I want to live and move my young daughter to potentially? And where do I have a really good opportunity to win? You know, I'd be willing to bet money right now, Mark, that Bob Bradley is doing everything he can to bring back Benny Fellhaber as a midfielder for them at a reasonable price. So that, you know, there's a lot of these guys where, you know, if it's a, okay, I'm going to go to Colorado, we're probably going to be bad, I might not be playing a whole lot. At least if that's going to happen, I want to get paid. That's what they had to do with Alan Gordon. So there's a possibility that you're overpaying for some of these guys where, you know, maybe Atlanta United looking to fill a role, or LAFC or somebody else who's a probable playoff team is going to get a discount because of the benefits of a potential to win that somebody else is going to have. Whereas, you know, Ozzie Alonso, if he's coming to the Colorado Rapids, it's like, ugh, we're going to be terrible. I'm going to have to do a lot of work. Get me mine. You know, we'll see. Anything else that we have to talk about on this front, Mark?
I think we covered everything that's possibly coverable at this point.
All right, listeners, follow us on Twitter @soccer_rabbi, @LWSMattPollard. Check out our soccer musings, Rapids related or otherwise, Pittsburgh Soccer Now and TBD. And for myself, lastwordonsoccer.com. Follow us on Twitter, Rapids96Podcast, or email us at rapids96podcast@gmail.com. You know, if there's not a whole lot of news, folks, and we get a bunch of questions, we might do a full Ask HTHL session. We've got a couple of other interviews coming up that I'm trying to schedule in the next couple of weeks, and then in January, that hopefully will tide you over for the start of preseason. Subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. I did tweet out, and I will pin this on our Twitter profile, a survey that we have through iTunes to get a little bit of a better understanding of the demographics and how people like to listen to our podcast. And there's also opportunities for you to then make comments there on what you like or what you don't like. You can always email us or tweet us those comments. We got one question about the audio quality earlier this week that I hopefully have resolved for this podcast right now, but we're always open to your commentary. And, you know, if nothing happens big in the reentry draft, or the Rapids aren't super, you know, busy in January, folks, we're going to be looking for, you know, some stuff to try and fill some content, and we are open to suggestions as what you want to hear if the Rapids aren't having anything of newsworthy, but you still want us to have a podcast. With that, thank you very much for listening. We'll see you next week.